And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till Noon Show. It's just turning 4 minutes past 9 on this Tuesday, the 29th of July. Thanks to Donald for sitting in yesterday and anchoring what turned out to be a really busy show. Of course, we had that, what seems to have been broadly welcomed news from the Health Minister that she wants to see Letterkenny University Hospital to be a place for people to want to come and work and where the best care will be delivered for the people of Donegal. And speaking to those off the record, far better in the know than I would be, they are delighted with this news. They think it's a massive, massive development. And I think it's a testament to all of the people, the campaigners that were down there and met with the minister when she was up visiting recently, the GPs that come together, the consultants who, you know, it's not easy to speak out in a big organisation like the HSC, but they did, and they did us all proud. That pressure, along with, I suppose, I think the revelation that a hub for Sligo may or may not have been part of a deal with Mr. Lowry, I suppose it all made it all very interesting. And I was confident the whole time, even though I was criticised for being confident, that it just was an argument, it was a conversation, it was a call that could not be ignored. And I know you've talked about it extensively on the show yesterday, but I just wanted to recognise the significance of it, and also to praise Minister Carol McNeill for coming up and engaging with people. She seems to be, very natural around people and delivering on a commitment. We'll see. Obviously, we have to keep the feet to the fire. But it seems that, and as I say, it's from people that know much better than I might, it seems that, you know, this is incredibly, incredibly positive news for Letterkenny. Let's go to the newspapers this morning. The Irish Independent. There is enormous confusion in government and the EU about the products which will be covered by the baseline 15% tariff, which activates on Friday following the US trade deal. It's still unclear if pharmaceuticals, which are critical to the Irish economy, will be included in the 15% bracket, or if they could yet be hit with a higher or in a higher bracket. The fate of the other sectors that are important to Ireland is also unclear, with details yet to emerge about alcohol and some dairy products. The EU is insisting that pharma tariffs will be capped at 15% on the basis of a very clear political commitment made by US President Donald Trump during talks with Ursula von der Leyen of the European Commission on Sunday. Now, the Irish government seems pretty certain, those speaking from within its ranks, that we will be capped at 15%, which is, I suppose, where it was going to land, wasn't it? It was never going to be 10. It was unlikely to be 20 or 25, so 15 is where it's at. It feels a little bit Brexity to me, because obviously, you know, during Brexit, we took a big hit here compared to some other European countries, and it kind of feels like we could be going down that line again in terms of this deal with the US on tariffs. But we shall see, we shall see. We should know soon enough. On to the Irish Times now, and the sole suspect in the suspected triple murder of a mother and her two teenage children in County Fermanagh has died in hospital, police confirmed. Ian Rutledge, who was 43, was taken to the Royal Victoria Hospital in Belfast last Wednesday following the fatal shootings at Maguire's Bridge. Vanessa White, 45, originally from County Clare, her son James, 14, and daughter Sarah, 13, died in the same incident at the family home. And Mr. Rutledge was married to Ms. White and was the father of her two children. The Police Service of Northern Ireland confirmed he died in hospital yesterday evening. Sources said he was brain dead since the shooting and was in a critical care unit. So, I mean, that's a very, very personal tragedy. And you don't know if the family would be, well, I'll have to be careful not to speak insensitively, but moving on to the Irish Daily Mail now. And cocaine use, particularly amongst women, is surging. Apparently, many are using it as a low-fat alternative to alcohol, one of Ireland's leading rehab centres has said. The Rutland Centre Rehab Clinic yesterday published its 2024 annual report, warning of a growing national crisis as cocaine replaces other drugs. The centre's head of clinical services, Emma Canavan, described how children are snorting cocaine in their school lockers, and said there's even an app being used to have it delivered by drones in Ireland, believe it or not. She also told the Irish Daily Mail at the report's launch, young women feel like cocaine is not being or is not going to derail their weight loss journeys or the progress in the gym. If they were to use alcohol, it would negatively affect those things. So cocaine is nearly kind of a loophole to get a buzz without having to ingest additional calories. So apparently a spike in women taking cocaine, whether that's the motivations or not, statistically, it is shown to be that more women are taking cocaine. The Irish Daily Star this morning is amongst all the papers that report that a man has been sentenced to death for the murder of Private Sean Rooney in Lebanon. The military court sentenced Mohammed Ayad to the death penalty and a massive fine for his role in the Irish peacekeepers killing. The sentence is valid for 25 years, but nobody has been executed in the country for around 20 years. It can also be revealed that Ayad was not in court to learn his fate. The killer is understood to be in hospital and will have to present himself to the authorities once he's discharged. Sources also indicate his sentence will likely be commuted, which probably means commuted to a life sentence rather than death. In addition, Ali Saliman and Ali Khalifa were jailed and fined for 3 months and 1 month respectively. Others were also fined and not jailed, while one, Mohammed Mazar, was released because of insufficient evidence. So the family have yet to speak formally. We will reach out to them, of course, when it's appropriate for them to do so, or perhaps they're legal representation, just to get a reaction to that for you, as I say, when the time is right, by their reckoning, not ours. The Irish Daily Mirror this morning, and Donald Trump has vowed to press Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to allow more aid into Gaza, saying, "You've got to feed the kids." I wonder, why is it now that the penny has dropped? I don't know. It just seems that all of a sudden, since images started going on the front pages or the top of website stories, that all of a sudden things have changed in terms of political leaders almost embarrassed into having to say something against this. Why did it take so long, I suppose, for the headlines, the front of pages, to be that of starving children to try and drive this message home? I'm not saying it's the press's fault and it's the politicians ultimately, but it seems to me, unless like I've missed something, it seems to be the arrival of these images in the press has sort of now all of a sudden triggered more of a political reaction to what's going on. Well, Trump made his comments as the UK's Prime Minister Keir Starmer is expected to summon ministers for an emergency cabinet meeting this week to discuss a UK-led plan for peace in Gaza. Starmer yesterday travelled with his wife Victoria to the US presidential Turnberry Golf Resort in Scotland, where the situation in the Middle East was high on the agenda for talks. And let's finally go to the Irish Sun this morning. Zapping the brain, and I wouldn't advise you do this, but anyway, zapping the brain could improve fitness without people having to lift a finger. Research suggests electrical stimulation for just 30 minutes a day for a week was found to boost heart and lung performance in tests. In the trial on 28 people, a device on the ear was used to stimulate the vagus nerve. It helps to control bodily processes such as the heartbeat, breathing and digestion. I don't know. As I say, I wouldn't suggest it, but there you go. 086 60 25 000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25 000. If you wish to give us a call, of course, it's 074 91 25 000, and you can email as well, comments@highlandradio.com. A caller says, interesting that the government was in so much fear of the Lowry deal being made public, they gave Donegal what it wanted. A lot of serious questions need answering here. Well, that's one take on it, I suppose. In relation to the tariffs deal, Germany's not happy with the deal either, Greg. Okay, thank you. We aren't getting solely shafted this time. Merz was out whining about it this morning, even though him and Maloney were the ones pushing for a quick deal. Okay, let's go to line one and say good morning to Martin. Hi, Martin.
Good morning, Lee. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Right, we're talking about a speed van, its location, and I suppose the space it's taking up in and around Lifford. Talk to me about it.
I was going to Mass on Saturday evening. I always go early to get to sort of get the same space every week. It's just me. And I pulled down about 6 o'clock, imagine that they have 6, I pulled down about 6 o'clock, and there was a few cars there, all right. But the Go Safe van was sitting on actually 3 spaces, taken up that maybe, as I said to the man when I was talking to him, do you realise you're taking up 3 spaces here? And this is mass time, that maybe elderly people, I says, they're not bad shoulders, but they use these spaces every week. And he told me that he was told to sit there, and I says, who told you to sit there? He says, the guards. So I says, well, the guards know that that there's mass on every Saturday evening, nearly every chapel in the country at around 6:30, 6. But when I went into mass, somebody came in and said, he's away, he's gone.
Is there not a positive to this? I know, Martin, your issue maybe is taking up the parking spaces, but I mean, people could be crying for a Go Safe van outside the church saying, look, we're trying to go to mass, cars are speeding past us, you know, this is where one of these vans need to be. What I'm trying to say is Go Safe damned if they do and damned if they don't.
I understand that, and I respect the work that the Go Safe vans are doing, but you know, not at mass time. Taking up 3 spaces near hand the gate. Surely if it was further away from the gate, okay, but near hand the gate, where I know that the same people use every week.
Okay, well, sure. Look, we'll see what the rest of the public think, Martin. You contacted Go Safe yourself anyway. You're that unhappy about this situation.
That's right, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay, well.
Like, I know everybody has a boss, but he told me he was told to sit there, and I said, I don't think it's right to be told to sit there at mass time. He was there yesterday evening too. I respect that. He was there yesterday evening.
Well, maybe he's keeping the store safe, though. You know, people crossing the road, young kids or older people, perhaps. You know, maybe the presence of that Go Safe van is making going. I'm sure the car park's not wedged. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of spaces.
No, at the front of the chapel. I'm talking about, he's not on the car park. He's on the space in front of the chapel.
Right. Okay. All right, then listen, Martin, thank you for that. What do you think out there? If you're familiar with that situation, maybe you've got something to say about it. 086 60 25,000. Catching on some of the comments coming in from yesterday as it relates to the game, I'll just run through these for you. Very disappointed in the amount of Donegal supporters leaving Croke Park yesterday with 10 to 15 minutes to go. Everyone looking for tickets for the final and then to turn their back and walk out on them when they were getting well beat. Let's hope we make it to the final next year again and these so-called supporters don't get tickets. By email here, a 10-point gap is a hiding in an All-Ireland final. Nobody's saying it. That comes in from Declan and Milford, obviously replying to something. Another caller says, Donegal sat off too much. If you give Kerry that much time and space, they destroy you. That's what happened. Another, I'm told there's a big demand for humble pie this morning. All right, okay. Let's be nice. Ray Donegal versus Kerry. Did Donegal display disrespect and arrogance by walking out on the pre-match parade early yesterday and leaving the Artane band on the pitch on their own? I'm not sure. I mean, they did break away to get down to the furthest part of the pitch. Is that disrespectful? I don't know. I did notice it. I'm not sure if it would be classed as disrespectful or not. But at the end of the day, look, it's what happened afterwards that people are talking about, isn't it? In relation to that news about the hub for Donegal, well done to Ireland Radio on being the voice of Donegal on health, defective concrete and many other issues. On behalf of elders in Donegal, I'd like to thank the Minister for Health for her decision on the surgical hub. More than happy to pass that on. Myself and my husband are 79 and 80, and we both have to travel to Sligo every month for an eye injection. It's an exhausting journey for both of us. With this new hub, now, will this save us the trip? Well, I can't say anything that's going to be giving you false hope or dashing hopes either. I simply don't know. Hopefully that is one of the services. I chat to so many people just randomly bumping into people and be chatting, and it comes up that they have to go to Sligo for an eye injection. And it's often older people, obviously, because of the condition that's affecting them. And it's crazy. I really wish that was one thing that would change. Delighted this healthcare facility has been approved. Well done to consultant Dr. Anya Keating, ED, for her tireless work on this, and to all the doctors and politicians across the board, and Greg, who supported this 100%. Another, well done to all the doctors and consultants for standing shoulder to shoulder over the surgical hub. Also, Highland Radio for their relentless highlighting of this through arranged interviews with the health minister, doctors, consultants, ministers, etc. Another one here. Now we need our community hospital saved before it's too late. COVID saved them temporarily, but with services decimated at community hospitals like St. Joseph's, like where physio, day hospital and so many services in the past, will the long stay and respite units go to the new hospital in Letterkenny, meaning that people from Glenfinn, Meanrea, Ballybofey haven't to take that mad traffic journey to Letterkenny to see their loved ones. Now save our community hospitals. They are the best potential step-down services for Letterkenny University Hospital anyway. Donegal, please stick together to save our community hospitals. Okay, well, sure. We'll see. The dust is just settling on the battle over the surgical hub. Liam Hegarty joins us on the programme now, and we talk about big issues. August 2017, devastating floods. We went down to Inishowen, I think, on the day or the day after. Such was the extent of the... what went on. And you would think at this point it would be resolved. August 2017, what are we heading into now? August 2025. Liam Hegarty joins me. Hi, Liam.
Hi, morning, Greg. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right. Now, it was in the month of 2017, August, sorry, the month of 2017, a number of houses in Burnfoot badly flooded. And it's a combination of public, private homes, isn't that? Well, social sort of and private homes. What's your interest in this?
That's it. I'm a resident of Lost Nagrinya. We're in the private houses down in Burnfoot, Greg. And then behind us then you have the council houses where poor Calhoun, you were talking to Calhoun, her and her neighbours. They're still out of their houses. They still never got back into their houses. And we had a meeting with them last November and they told us it could be another 7 years before the flood defences go up.
Given the fact that these houses are clearly vulnerable to flooding and that at least some of them have defective concrete, why are we rebuilding or even looking at rebuilding them in that space? Should we not be finding an alternative site, get an agreement with homeowners and the council and relocating these properties?
That's correct, Craig. That would be the best outcome out of the whole lot, yep. They're expecting us to rebuild in our floodplain and we can't rebuild. So we rebuild again. We're going to flood again, Greg. We can't do nothing until these flood defences up. Scale back the flood defences. Buy us out. Let us get on the rest of their lives. Like, it does. It's turned into an absolute joke now at this stage. Like,
but, I mean, there surely is an argument that if these houses are moved, there's no need to spend that money on flood defences. Or might it have to be done anyway?
They'll have to do some kind of flood defences. Yep, New Bride scaled back where our houses were located. They could use that as a floodplain, as a barrier, and scaled. They could scale back, and then the village of Burnfoot itself then would be protected, and then the other remaining houses around would be protected. Yeah, but it would be, it's the most feasible thing to relocate us by us out.
Well, look, the councillor aware of this. I asked this question directly of the Minister for Housing as well. I think he actually travelled to Burnfoot during his last visit here, or one of his most recent visits here. So he's aware of it. Do you believe that this is sort of a Minister for Housing responsibility, or are you waiting on the council or what?
The Minister of Housing and the Minister OPW, Boxer Mourne. Boxer Mourne come that day after that devastating night. He stood in my kitchen up to his ankles and muck, and he says, Liam, look, I will get this sorted. I will get you the money for this. I said, thank you, Boxer. And where credit's due, he landed back mine the following June, the Lufford. Mm-hmm. Craig, by then he announced the funding.
Yep.
And he was moved on then, sure, relaxed, pushed on. So we've requested a meeting with the Minister at the start of the year, Minister Boxer Mourne, and Hopefully it will come and meet us to try and get this sorted out once and for all, because we're getting nowhere. We don't have all county council at the minute. Like, the latest website was updated there last week and the planning now is not being submitted now to autumn time. And they keep telling us, told us November will be submitted in January. They're just kicking the can down the road. And all they are actually doing is wasting taxpayers' money, because there's no contractor ever going to get insurance to work beside defective concrete homes, and that is just the plain and simple of it. And they're just kicking it down the road and kicking it down the road. Like,
And I think really an awful lot is being asked of council staff by government as well. And there is only a certain amount of work, a certain amount of people can do either. I wonder if they need more resources to deal with the likes of this issue, flood relief schemes in general.
Yes, they do, Greg. There was, we were told at the last meeting last November, there's one person in charge of 11 flood schemes on Donegal. One person. I think they drafted on another person, but one person. You know what I mean? That's not going to work, Greg.
So just to be clear, as it relates, as a resident of this area, are you saying, right, get your finger out, get the planning in, get the flood scheme sorted, get us, you know, as safe as possible? Are you saying, right, scrap that, let's find an alternative site, build houses elsewhere? What if you had a meeting with the minister, whichever minister you feel is the most appropriately qualified to answer the question, what are you pushing for, clearly?
It's relocation. It has to be at this stage. Like, I'm in my house, me and the wife, chilling in the house 20 years. This is our family home. We don't want to leave. We don't want to leave there. My kids are settled there. Everybody's settled there. But the flood scheme's not going to, it's not going to materialise. So just buy us out. Let us go. Move somewhere else. Relocate us now at this stage. Like, we've been more impatient. We've done everything they've asked of us and still no finish. Like, the scheme, when they announced at the start, that flood scheme was supposed to be operational June this year. Let's say they're not even at the planning stage yet. And a planning's going to take at least 18 months.
Okay, Liam, you've been heard. Thank you for that. We'll see what the council have to say in relation to that as well. Obviously, we'll make our inquiries. If you have a view on that, 086 60 25,000. Just wanted to say, says a listener, I'll come back to that. There's a word missing. It's about the what went on in the Brandywell, and I don't think they're going to go back, but I'll read it off air and then read it out. Why doesn't the government put a levy on things like furniture and bedding, which would require a supplier of new items to collect the old items for recycling? It works very well with electrical items, and it would prevent the illegal dumping of mattresses and other bulky material in our woods and rivers. It costs a lot of money to bring a bulky item to a recycling centre, and people, for various reasons, including the ability to pay, take stuff to the forest or the river, where the cost of removal is more than the charge for disposing of the items legally. It's a toughie, because I do know there are these days whereby the cost of recycling a mattress or something is either free or greatly reduced at some of the civic community sites. It's very, very expensive to dispose of a mattress, and I don't think people would want to be paying for that in advance, especially when some mattresses you get a 20-year guarantee with them or what have you. Like, I get where you're coming from. I just don't think the public would be prepared to front-load the payment on something like that. But anyway, let's see what others think. 086 60 25,000. Okay, we are joined on the programme now by Shauna Taylor, Project Coordinator at the Foyle Deaf Association. Good morning, Shauna.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Great. Lovely to have you on the programme. Now, a group of newly qualified tour guides are hoping they can help make visiting Northern Ireland more accessible to the deaf community. So talk to me how this is progressing, because a number of people have graduated, haven't they, to assist in this regard?
So earlier on in the year, I was approached by the Northwest Regional College, and I was approached by a member of the team at the School of Business and Financial Services, Luanne, and I was asked if there would be any interest in the deaf community taking part and completing the tour guide level 2. I have worked with Luanne in the past, supporting other young deaf adults, and I have to say, as an individual and as a professional, she's fantastic to work with, and I was very, very excited about the proposition. It was funded by Tourism NI. I put the proposal to the Foyle Deaf Association, the deaf community, and they were excited about it. So, as you say, we now have, I think, 6 in total who have completed their tour guide level 2, and very excited about it. Absolutely, you know, chomping at the bit now to get started, and very much about supporting the deaf community and the likes of the tourist industry in Northern Ireland. So I have to say, it has been a beautiful process. It's been lovely, and it's lovely to see the deaf community at the end actually graduate with their certificates as well.
Yeah, because you're the only hearing person amongst the 6 recently qualified.
Yes, and I'd said to someone when I was chatting to them this week, there was a method to me doing the course. Greg, I am a CODA, so therefore, and a CODA is a child of a deaf adult, so I am blessed in that my mother is profoundly deaf, my father is hearing. So I have grown up all my life with a deaf parent, and whilst I am not deaf, I do believe that I have an understanding and an empathy of a deaf person and the deaf community. Now, as I've also said, the majority of the deaf community use sign language as their main method of communication. And people automatically assume that because someone's deaf, that the only thing that they've lost, Greg, is their hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's a lot more than that. I mean, they've lost their language and their language skill, a lot of them. So in learning sign language, they're learning another skill. And it's very easy for us to say, oh, well, they've learned Irish sign language or they've learned Irish sign language. But sign language is very much like a foreign language. And if you're speaking to a foreign speaker, I mean, they don't speak in the same structure, grammar or syntax that we do. So therefore, I felt that maybe it would be a good idea. Having worked in the North West Regional College in the past, supporting young deaf adults, maybe if I did the course with the deaf community, I could support them in the terminology and the structure going through the course. And, you know, it's not that they're any less intelligent, but sometimes things just have to be made very plain and very simple. And I think the English language can be, I mean, we can use 1,000 words to say one thing, and we just have to simplify things. And that was the reason why I did the course with them. So in going through the course and me completing it, I was able to sit with them and go, right, the tutor has asked you to do this. This is what we need to do, and just make things very simple.
Do we know yet how their skills now will be employed? Is this like sort of maybe having, you know, one of the guides, going with the regular tour, if you know what I mean, and it just makes it more accessible, or tours only for the deaf community, or how do you see it going forward?
I think what we're looking at, and I mean, we've taken our guidance, and we will continue to take our guidance from Luanne, who did the course for us. I mean, Luanne's has done this for many, many years, and we're waiting on the official certification coming through now, and then we do have the legalities to have a look at as a charity, as a deaf organisation. So there is the things like public liability insurance and one thing and another. That will be sorted out. And then we will then be registered with the Tourist Board in the Northern Ireland Tourist Board, and they also the Tourist Board within Derry itself. So if the opportunity arises and they get in contact with us and say, we have we have a number of deaf individuals that are coming to Derry that would love to do a tour. Can you provide a deaf tour guide? Then we most certainly will do everything we can in order to provide that for the individuals.
Yeah, and of course, finally, you know, I think it was your mother's quoted as saying that the deaf community can feel excluded at times. And I suppose unless you are that person or close to them, you don't really spot it.
You don't, and I mean, and that is very indicative of all disabilities, unless it becomes your lived and learned experiences, Greg. You don't, and you wouldn't feel it. As I say, I'm a CODA, and I would say that I would have great empathy for the deaf community and for anybody with a hearing loss, but at the end of the day, I am not deaf. What I will also say is, from doing the course with the deaf community, I mean, they have such a story to tell. It is absolutely phenomenal. We, in doing the course within the Northwest and within the Derry area, we had Patricia, and Patricia spoke about, you know, events like Bloody Sunday. Patricia would have been young at the time, would have experienced it. She would have, you know, in the 80s when things was, you know, quite turbulent in the north, Patricia was very aware and lived those experiences. And we haven't heard those experiences from the likes of the deaf community and other communities that have lived through it. So it's fantastic that they're now being given the opportunity to do this.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, listen, thanks very much indeed for joining us, Shauna. It's been a lovely chatting to you.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you for your time.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Thank you so much. That's Shauna Taylor, Project Coordinator at the Foyle Deaf Association. Anything we can do to make life more inclusive, I think, the better. Just wanted to say it's my last time in the Brandywell, or my last time in the Brandywell was 20 years ago, and I still never set my feet in it again. The abuse the Finn Harps supporters got that night was not terrible. Very foul language and name-calling. Not a very nice atmosphere to be in. Even the ball boys not giving the ball back to our goalkeeper, hiding it or kicking it past him or dropping it short, that he would have to go and get it. Okay, so that's off the back of Moragro that was up there, but they say they've... Their last visit to the Brandywell was 20 years ago and they're not setting foot in it again. A caller says, if it wasn't for Marion Harkin speaking up about the Lowry deal, would Donegal have got the hub? My view is no. Or at least it could have been much more difficult. I think that when it was revealed that it was part of the deal, and then when Mr. Healy-Ray doubled down on that in the second part of the conversation, the story got a little bit bigger than just us wanting a hub. It sort of could have potentially dragged that deal into question. Plus, not to forget, the minister, the health minister's, I believe, genuine interest in actually delivering for Donegal as well. I think that definitely was a factor, and I think she deserves credit in relation to that. But no, I think when it emerged that Sligo was always... It was always going to be Sligo. I think that worked very much in our favour. Greg, another post office in rural Donegal is closing. Ballylar in Fannet is closing soon. Where does this leave an elderly rural community, Greg? Could you make this your next campaign? Well, we've worked on it, and we heard Councillor Declan Meehan talking on this issue as well, and we have... I'm not sure if it came through yesterday or if it's yet to come through, but they are going to put it out to tender again. It's not going to be where it was. It's a terrible thing, I think, losing something that's been there for hundreds of years in one form or other. But anyway, a caller says the speed van is there for a purpose in Lifford, to save lives, not to take up a space. Another, don't understand why this man is complaining about the speed van being parked at the chapel. I've lived there all my life and the speed on this road is ridiculous, and even overtaking on this narrow road. That's kind of where my gut feeling was, to be honest with you. You can blame Lee Gooch for going down to Kerry and putting flags up. Fairly came back to bite him in the bum. Yes, I don't think so. That was all just a bit of banter, and Kerry were at the same crack. He always looking for angles. Well, Donegal and especially Highland Radio underestimated Kerry. My flag still flying high in Rathmullen. That comes in from Tricia. Tricia, we just got behind the team. And when you get to a final, you can dare to dream. You know, this whole conversation of, oh, well, you can't... sometimes you just have to say, right, we've got here, we can do this, and this is how we'll do it, and so on and so forth. Congratulations to the Donegal team. Second best team in Ireland. Personally, I think this is a brilliant result for Jim and his team, made for such a great summer. It did indeed. And it's just when you get so close, though, you just want to go one step beyond, don't you? Right, Sandra is with me now, and we're going to talk Ryanair baggage charges. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, you, Greg. How are you?
I'm all right. Okay, so what was your recent experience with Ryanair, Sandra?
Well, it wasn't actually recently, Greg. It was actually, I'll tell you, it was actually before COVID, about, I think it's 5 or 6 years since COVID hit.
Yeah.
And myself and my friend Rose, we were going over to Blackpool. Well, we were flying into Manchester from Dublin Airport here, down here in the south.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually, the bag size I had was the right size with Ryanair, where we weren't charged going out. But when we were coming back, we had to get out quick because I think Ireland was going on lockdown the Monday after the weekend. We were away over at a country music weekend.
Yeah.
And we were flying out of Manchester Airport, and we got charged for our bags, £100 sterling, £50 sterling each, because we were told our bag was the wrong size for going under the seat on the Ryanair flight. But we got out of Dublin, we weren't charged going out of Dublin.
Mm.
So we were charged coming back. So we were lucky we had money with us, extra money with us, or we'd have been in trouble.
Yeah.
Ryanair company.
They're they've got these baggage sizes left, right and centre and everywhere, and did you think you had the right bag going out, or did you say, right, listen, we'll chance it?
Well, this is a bag I always use anytime I'm flying, anywhere, if I'm going on a sun holiday or all. And I've never had any fees to pay for the wrong size bag, Greg. And it's just, I don't know what it was now. And we didn't buy anything that made the bag look bigger or overweight, you know. But I did email Ryanair when a day or two after and asked, like, why were we not charged going out, a fee going out as well as a fee coming back? And I got no reply from anybody in Ryanair in the offices in Dublin at all.
Yeah.
You know, but it's the bag I always use going everywhere.
Yeah, it's a funny one because it does seem to be that it's down to the staff in particular airports as well, whether or not you get away with it. Some of them are all over it, others aren't. And now, obviously, since it's a long time ago since you were hit, Sandra, but we know now that the baggage staff are being incentivised maybe to try and make them all much tougher on the likes of yourself.
I agree on that. They're being told to have to, because I was listening, I think, to an interview. I don't know if it was on the news or on the radio news here down here on RTE. And I think it was Michael O'Leary himself had said that they have been told to actually keep an eye out for it and put the fee down on them as well.
Yeah, he says they might even double how much they get per bag they find. All right, Sandra, listen, thanks for sharing your story with us.
Okay, thanks, Greg.
Take care. That's Sandra O'Shaughnessy there talking about Ryanair baggage charges. Now, coming up after 10 o'clock, we've got Community Garda information, where we bring you the very latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána O'Connor first here on the 9 till noon show each Tuesday. And then coming up after 11, we meet the Marys. The Mary from Dunloe International Festival is up and running now. And as part of that, of course, they do select their Mary annually. And there's 15 taking part in the event this year, and we'll have a chat to all of them during the course of the 11 to 12 hour here on the 9 till noon show. So maybe you're listening from some far-flung location backing your local Mary. Hopefully you'll get to hear what they have to say on the show a little later on. So stay tuned for that. And of course, like everything on this program, you can watch it. If you want to go onto our website, click the Watch Live button or go to YouTube, the YouTube app. You can watch on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland and we are there. Right, now some more of your comments coming in so far this morning. Watching the homecoming last night, it just looked like all the players wanted to do was to go home. Kerry were 9 points ahead after 15 minutes. They controlled the game. Donegal were great all year, but the players just wanted to get home to their families. And of course, you know, we saw other teams recently cancel homecomings. I think how wide the result was, there's a lot of things factor into that, and sort of when you know a game is out of your hands any longer, it's very hard perhaps to keep the same level of intensity. When you can look at the clock, you know there's not going to be a flag of 6 or 7 extra minutes to play. You know the Hooter is going to go at 70. So, but history records the final score, don't they? Or doesn't it? So back more, and I'll be honest with you, I fully respect our earlier caller who has his concerns about this Go Safe fan outside Letterkenny, outside Lifford Chapel. But the majority of people, I think, seem to be thinking it's not the worst thing ever. The Go Plus speed check can't be parked on private property. I was caught out myself, says a listener there. Greg, good to see a judge come down heavy on people in court yesterday in Donegal for parking in disabled parking zones. Hopefully this will teach people a lesson. Yeah, we are seeing more and more people seemingly being, caught or fined for parking in disabled spaces, but it's not necessarily leading to a reduction in, leading to a reduction in the amount of people that are being found to have done it, if that makes sense. A caller says, I have a comment about the prevention of cruelty to animals. I am in a show and I reported an incident 2 years ago. There is a dog in a 40-metre container and the dog gets out 30 minutes a day. He gets no daylight, food or water. The ISPCA didn't even know where this part of Inishowen was when I mentioned it to him. The poor dog is crying all of the time. What do you do in that situation? Is that animal cruelty? I would. It would make you wonder that why they didn't come down really quite heavy on that. We've covered this on the show before, and I thought I'd bring this article to you because it's kind of an update on it. And it's often when we think of Garda response times, you know, we think of where they're located, what station they're in, where the local district headquarters is. And often it's down to one in three of them not trained to drive at high speeds or to use lights or sirens, that they are driving around in a vehicle equipped for all that, but they have to drive around as sort of normal citizens, supposed to, you could say. So a third of Garda drivers are not trained to drive at speed or to use lights or sirens. That's according to the paper. There are now calls to change the entire driving training system to a new model, which will see more members of the force being able to respond to calls without fear of discipline. There have been several instances in recent years in which members of the force have faced legal or disciplinary difficulties for chasing alleged criminals. In total, there are just 4,700 members of the force who are trained to the level where they can use lights and sirens while also breaking the speed limit to respond to calls. The rest of the Garda members, 8,913 of them, have only completed the very basic driving assessment, which allows them to drive patrol cars and to be able to drive at higher speeds and to use equipment such as lights or sirens. Gardaí are required to pass a certain level of training called Competency Behaviour Driving 2. CBD2 is a two-week course aimed at frontline Garda drivers. This course contains road techniques and emergency response driving. And as I say, we were talking about this a couple of years ago with the head of the GRA as he was then. And it was like, you know, they want to get the training. All right, we'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show as you head towards the news at 10 after this short break. Just to remind you, coming up after 10 o'clock, we've got the very latest edition of Community Garda Information, where we'll bring you the very latest appeals and information to you. That's just after the 10 o'clock news. And then after 11, we'll be chatting to the participants seeking to be crowned the Mary from Dunloe 2025. All of them are calling in, which is all very exciting. So we'll interview them in threes and learn a little bit more about them and why they chose to enter the competition and what they hope to achieve in it. So that's good, isn't it? Good morning to Audrey Nealis watching on Facebook. Dolores Dunleavy, obviously always watching with us. Good morning, Greg, and all the Highland team. And Magadula, morning, Greg, and listeners. Where is Highland Radio? I want to visit sometime. We're broadcasting from the northwest of Ireland here in County Donegal. And you can watch the show, of course, on Facebook, on X, and on YouTube. Let's say good morning to Kiva here. Kiva, how are you?
Not too bad, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay. So we had the initial caller complaining about the car, the speed van parking outside a chapel in Lifford. Other people seem to not think it's that bad an idea, but where do you sit on all of this?
Yeah, I don't actually agree with it, but sometimes what happens there is that there's a wall between the, so there's like a car park, you know, the car parking spaces, and then like as you're coming down from, if you pull off that slipway, there is like a wall going up to the graveyard, like a really high wall, and sometimes he's not always visible. He's always like kind of like parked up near that wall, which is not, as far as I'm aware, that they're supposed to be visible at all times.
Yeah, that if that is the case, Kiva, that takes the deterrent factor out of it, doesn't it? Because the whole idea would be that people would see the van and slow down, thus making it safer for everyone on the road.
Yeah, and I understand that he has to be there. And you know what? There's a lot of speeding going on in that part of the road, which I totally agree with. So if they do, but he should not be parked at mass time at three spaces. Definitely not. I totally agree with the person. We're not, I'm not saying that, you know, he shouldn't be there. Of course he should be there, you know, for everybody's own safety.
But you saying, as I say, and I've said, there's no point repeating it. They need to be seen. That's the whole function of it. And that's that's what you'd expect, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right.
There's loads of times that I've come around that corner and obviously I don't be speeding that part of the road, but he's not always visible.
Yeah. Yep. It's funny, Kiva, these speed vans, some people would love them in their areas and others want them chased out of the area. You know, it's like everyone has their own opinions on all of this.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, thank you for your comments. I do appreciate it. And I think really it's going to only have its the road safety benefit if you can actually see it. A caller says, I have a bank account for years. Yesterday, I tried to add my wife's name to the account, only to be told I have to close my account and open a new account in both our names. This is very inconvenient, as I've had a number of bills coming out of it. I think it's a very poor treatment of the bank on a lifetime customer. Well, that is a bit strange, isn't it? You would imagine that it would be a case of just adding the name to the bank. The whole handling. You certainly don't want to... Sometimes I don't think we're fully aware of all the payments that are coming out of our bank accounts, and that sounds like a great inconvenience to me. Just to let you know something you probably already know, I referenced grocery prices last week, and it's something I really find frustrating because it's like a bill that we can't avoid, and it keeps going up and keeps going up. Every time they put a few extra cent on, it's just that point where another family has to choose between food and heat or something along those lines. But grocery prices, I'm told, are rising three times as fast as general inflation, new data has revealed. Prices in the supermarkets are up by an average of almost 5.5%, while the current general inflation rate is 1.8%. A combined extra 46.2 million year-on-year was spent in July on sun care, smoothies, ice creams, pickles and drinks, antipasti and fresh fruit. I don't know what antipasti is. The spiralling bills mean families are turning more and more to promotions as they seek out better value in their weekly shop. The spiralling bills mean families are turning more and more, as I mentioned, to promotions, vouchers, etc. All right, so that's it. So you're not going mad. Unfortunately, your cost of your groceries is going up all the while. Okay, that's the first hour of the 9 till noon show for this Tuesday. We'll be back with more, much more, in fact, after we take a break now for the news at 10 o'clock.